Emperor Tales of the Frozen South by CWB and read by Ghost of Nuggets Past. Chapter 12. Aitua Tragedy. Summary. Sherlock is very close to being reunited with John, but what he finds when they arrive at Cassiopeia is not at all what he'd expected. Notes. There is a minor character death in this chapter, but without graphic description. I want to give fair warning that, well, nature is nature, and nature happens here. The iceberg appears as a barely discernible fog in the underwater distance. Its keel reaches deeper than its vast width, giving Sherlock the impression of an upside-down mountain. Above the surface, subtle variations in color begin to form on the pale blue-white bulk of it. Almost there. John. Sherlock moves to the edge of the cluster of swimmers surrounding him, eager to get a better view. He tucks his feet tighter against his tail and pumps his wings as hard as he can, the muscles across his chest burning with the strain. He soon catches up to Mycroft and uses his older brother's wake to lessen his own effort. Feeling the drag, Mycroft turns his head, rolls his eyes, and pops to the surface, indicating that Sherlock should do the same. Sherlock shoots straight up, nearly stabbing Mycroft's tail with his beak, then splashes down next to him.
What are you?
They screech at each other, not dropping their speed one iota.
I need to get to the iceberg, Sherlock gasps, splashing water into Mycroft's face. We all need to get to the iceberg, Sherlock. What is your particular hurry?
Sherlock doesn't answer that question, choosing instead to ask his own.
How much longer? Are we almost there? Are we? How much longer?
Do the math, little brother, or can you not figure it out?
He shouts the numbers of his equation over his shoulder as he swims on the surface, twisting and turning circles around Mycroft, who has slowed his pace to catch his breath.
Come on, Slowpoke! 5.7 over a distance of 122, swimming approximately 4, covering almost another 6 degrees of the sun, Mycroft! Only 6 degrees!
6.2, if you care to be precise, which it appears you do not, Mycroft retorts.
Sherlock's burst of speed is bringing him dangerously far out in front of the pack. Mycroft groans, but spurs himself on, diving below Sherlock and porpoising back up at the last moment, glancing off Sherlock's wingtip to throw him off balance. He hits the water again and pivots, coming bill-to-bill with his impulsive sibling.
Sherlock, slow down. You will get there. We will all get there. You must stay with the pack.
Sherlock tosses his head up in a dismissive gesture and tries to dive under Mycroft, but Mycroft anticipates his move and intercepts him again.
You can stay in the front if you want, with me, but you may not pass me. Are we clear?
Sherlock, are we clear?
I am not interested in explaining to Mummy and Daddy that you were more excited about becoming sealed food than you were about safety.
Sherlock slows and honks rudely in response. He'll listen, but he doesn't like it. They settle into a pace that is both reasonable and efficient, and Sherlock feels the logic of Mycroft's words settle over his spontaneous, hasty rush to just go. He won't admit it, but there is something comforting in a now-get-the-Hades-away-from-me kind of way about his family's protective nature. Mycroft maintains a steady pace, slightly behind and to the side of Sherlock, who stays at the very front, the prow of the pack. The iceberg is growing larger, taking on spectacular proportions as the late afternoon sunlight hits its peaks and valleys, creating a kaleidoscope of color across its surface. What was previously a dozen shades of white is now yellow, violet, orange, and all the hues of blue Sherlock could ever have imagined. They reach the outer waters of Cassiopeia in exactly 6.2 degrees of the sun, as predicted, although Sherlock wagers he could have done it faster without Mycroft's interference. They ascend for a sip of air, and he can just make out figures at the base of the berg. They break under and retain speed, and now we can see pangs flitting here and there, flashing invisibility as they turn the whites of their bellies toward him, then away. There's something frenetic about their movements, he observes. Something not as smooth as their usual graceful dance. He feels Mycroft jerk back next to him before he senses the danger himself. In the blink of an eye, Mycroft is several lengths ahead of him, plunging down, 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 angling the pack parallel to the iceberg instead of toward it. Sherlock intuitively reads his brother's body language and follows him without hesitation. Behind him, the rest of the pack swoops down in unified pursuit, a single body conforming to unspoken commands. They dive lower than Sherlock has ever dived before, at least 20 blue whales and counting. He is aware of a new world of sea life around him, of shapes and sizes and movements unknown, but he does not stop to catalog. He knows in the same innate place he knows he loves John that he cannot pause, cannot look away from Mycroft's trajectory. One by one, the fastest adults pull forward, taking their places along the flanks of the pack. They hedge the rest in, bumping the youngest as far into the center as possible, and then the elders. He sees Erebus fly past to relieve Mycroft, who drops to the back for a well-deserved break, before moving forward in rotation again, each adult along the perimeter taking a turn at the front. Sherlock's lungs burn, his wings throb, his chest constricts with the effort of maintaining his dive. He will need air, and soon. Finally, he sees the first bubbles whiz by, and his relief registers in the next instant. The pack rises en masse, all of them releasing the air trapped between the filaments of their feathers, creating a jet stream between their bodies and the water. This increases their speed trifold as they rocket upward, and before he knows it, Sherlock breaches the surface. They bob in the water, gasping, taking count, cooing comfort at their offspring. The council pangs gather to discuss what Sherlock realizes he's known since he first spotted the halting, jagged movements of his peers in the distance. Some of them were too large, he thinks to himself, weren't they? Hydruga leptonix. Leopard seals. It is a desperate age before they resume passage, and not until the scouts have declared it safe. The seals are gone. Mycroft cannot temper Sherlock's determination now, but he can trail him, so he does. They take turns in each other's wake, closing the gap between the pack and whatever carnage awaits. It would be a trip made in record time, but no one is paying any attention to that now. Eternity. John. He sees no birds in the water as they approach the berg. Not one. Nothing to see and observe and translate into meaning. The face of Cassiopeia races to meet them, but still they do not slow. Instead, they speed up, release one final primal burst of energy, and fling themselves out of the sea, arching high above the ice. They land with a grace that defies the brute force of the leap and skid to a halt. Behind them come the rest, one after the other. The wind cannot sweep the scent of adrenaline and fear away fast enough. The ice is smeared with blood and feathers. All around him, Sherlock sees injury and death. He will process this later. Right now, he needs to know. He stands tall and scans what he can see of his colony. His colony. He lifts his bill high and closes his eyes. He calls. He calls again and again and again. He forgets to stop and listen. There's a light touch on his shoulder, so he quiets himself and slowly, slowly opens his eyes and turns around. It is not John. It's Erebus, and Sherlock falls into him.
Turi, turi, Sherlock. It's all right. It's all right. He's coming, see? He was helping Cetus with the wounded, but he's coming. It's all right.
Sherlock turns from Erebus just as John reaches them, tobogganing the last stretch. He doesn't stop. He crashes into both of them, knocking them off their feet, then scrambles over to where Sherlock is sprawled on his stomach and buries his face in his neck. Sherlock tries to stand, but John won't stop. He just presses and presses, and finally Sherlock stops moving, and he nudges back, rubbing the top of his head and bill along John's chin.
Atua, you're here. Oh, God, Sherlock, you're here. You made it. You're alive, Ipayai. Are you okay? Are you hurt? John, let me see. Sherlock, Atua, Sherlock.
Sherlock hums soothing noises and lets himself be tugged at, positioned, rubbed. He had not anticipated this. He had swam, and he had thought of nothing but John's existence. It had been a black or white scenario, yes or no, alive or dead. Only one option would allow Sherlock to go on, to move and breathe and live. He had not thought beyond that, that John would be alive, but injured, but traumatized, but worried. Worried about him. Where he thought he would seek comfort, he is being sought. Where he thought he would have a story to tell, he has one to hear. John's need of him is staggering, and it fills him with purpose and responsibility and awareness. He understands now that it is not enough for him to have John in his life, to need John. He has to be in John's life, too. He has to be there for John. To give. Eventually, John stops shaking and chattering and pulls back enough to look Sherlock in the eye. They help each other stand, not letting go, and when he can, Sherlock looks John over, practicality competing with sentiment. John is covered in blood.
John, you're hurt. Where are you hurt? Why didn't you say? Let me see. Let me... I'm all right, Sherlock. It's not my blood. Well, not most of it, anyway. I'm okay. Stop. I'm okay.
Sherlock can't stop touching John, his chest and belly, his wings, his legs, his neck and face. He spins him around to see his back and tail, and John wobbles back, insists again that he's okay.
What do you mean, not most of it? What part of it is yours? How much? Where? Show me. What happened? Where are you injured? It's nothing. It's fine. Really, it wasn't... Nothing? Fine. You're bleeding. Where's Cetus? You need help.
Sherlock opens his bill and takes a deep breath, about to holler for the healer. But out of the corner of his eye, he sees Erebus, who had remained respectfully distant during their reunion. Good. Maybe the Elder would be able to talk some sense into John.
Elder Erebus, can you please tell John he needs healing? He's injured. Farah!
He adds, as if Erebus has temporarily lost his faculty for language and can't understand him. He looks back to John, who is staring with his tongue hanging out, in awe of the legendary elder.
Oh, Elder Erebus, this is John. John, this is Elder Erebus.
Erebus bows low, mannerly even, in the face of tragedy, and extends his wings to the sides.
A pleasure, young John. If you have no objection, may I please look at your shoulder?
John gapes.
His shoulder? What's wrong with his shoulder? Is that where you hurt?
Later, he will ponder why he lost all ability to observe and deduce when his entire system was overridden with concern for John. Concern? Panic? Sheer terror. John's shoulder twitches. He looks at Sherlock and leans in close, then whispers,
"That's Elder Erebus, the hunter."
Erebus tries not to smile and has to swallow down a chuckle when Sherlock whispers back,
"Yes, I know, and I'm Sherlock, and you're John, and if you don't let us look at your shoulder right now, I will do something bad."
Erebus steps in and prods at John's wing, causing John to wince. He scoops up some snow and swipes it over John's shoulder and chest, washing away the blood. For the first time, Sherlock realizes that some of it is dry, but some of it is new and still flowing from the site of the injury.
Oh, John sighs. That feels good.
Erebus continues to wash the blood away with snow, revealing more and more of a recognizable John. As he works, he speaks.
Let me know if this hurts you in any way, John. You've been through a terrible ordeal. It is not my intention to make it worse. Might you be able to tell us what happened?
What happened to me? Oh.
Sherlock shuffles behind John and peers over him, trying to get a better look at his injury.
Whatever you are comfortable sharing with us, you've no doubt had quite a shock. I don't wish to cause you further trauma.
No, it's okay. It's fine.
He leans back into Sherlock as he talks, resting and taking comfort.
We were finishing dinner. There was a krill pod, enormous. I've never seen so many. It came right up to the berg. It was so close, so fast. It was so fast. I had eaten my fill and come back to wait for Sherlock. I was going to climb to Fable's Peak, that one there, to wait. Sherlock, I was waiting for you, like I said, remember?
John is getting heavier against Sherlock now, and Sherlock has to lean forward on his toes to shift his weight and hold John up.
I remember, John, just like you promised.
Erebus has cleaned the wound thoroughly and is packing ice over it. John doesn't seem to notice.
And then I heard it screaming, so much screaming, and I turned and they were everywhere, the seals. They come out of nowhere, it seemed. Lasted forever, but it couldn't have had, could it? It was chaos. Everyone was calling. Everyone was calling for each other, searching. I saw.
Okay, that's enough, John. You've been very brave. Very brave indeed.
Erebus's voice is soothing, and John goes a little limper in Sherlock's wings.
It's okay. I can tell you. I should tell you. I saw parents go in after their children. Going back in, they were the brave ones, not me. Families gone, and I saw, do you know what they do? The seals, how they do it.
Erebus flinches.
Turi turi, John, turi turi, shh. Don't think about that. How did you hurt your shoulder? Can you tell us that?
She bit me.
Sherlock lifts his head from where it's nestled along John's cheek.
She bit me, but it's okay. She didn't mean to. She was trying to go in, but it made no sense. She was about to jump in. I held her back. I made her stay. She was trying to get to her parents, you see. Both of her parents were in the water. I held her back. She would have died, see? I held on to her, and she bit me. She wanted me to let her go, so she bit me.
I see. You were right, John. You did the right thing. You saved her life. Where is she now, this Peng?
With Elders Pavo and Vela. They're with the orphans and those who have lost someone.
John slips lower against Sherlock, sagging, the events of the day catching up with him as the adrenaline seeps away. Erebus helps Sherlock steady him between them, and John lets his eyes fall shut. He sits onto his haunches and rests his bill on his chest. Lets out a shudder of a sigh and sleeps.
Sherlock's son, he is seen into the darkest shadows of the sea today. The colony has suffered tremendous loss. I am sure the council will call for a hui soon, but for now, stay with him. Take care of him. His shoulder will be fine, but take care of him.
Yes, of course,
Sherlock replies, but Erebus is already moving away. Moving on to other groups, others who need him. He rubs his bill over the top of John's head, the barest of touches. John stirs.
John, my John, I'm so sorry.
John is far away, asleep but for the part of him still trying to make sense of what he's seen.
Not her fault, Sherlock, he breathes out. Not Marilla's fault.
Notes. Maori translations. Aitua, tragedy. Turi turi, a hushing word. Shh. Atua, God.
Oh, God.
Ipai ai, thank goodness. Whara, injured. Hui, meeting, conference. Using degrees of the sun as a time device. Obviously, says Sherlock, Pangs don't tell time the way we do. There is no 9:08 p.m., no 5 more minutes, no calendar year. I've been using X number of winters and solar cycles to describe years, and the number of full moons for months, but what do we do about minutes? I decided to use degrees of the sun because in this AU, the Pengs navigate and tell time by the position of the sun in the sky. We know that the sun, quote, moves around the earth, unquote, at 15 degrees per hour. When Sherlock is computing how much longer, he says that the iceberg is 6 degrees away, which is about 24 minutes. Penguins really do release bubbles from the tiny filaments of their feathers to reduce drag and increase speed. You can read about it here if you'd like. And there's a link to the Daily News. Article, Scientists Solve Mystery of Penguins' Incredibly Fast Underwater Swimming Speed, A Secret Layer of Bubbles. Emperors hunt fast midwater squids and fishes, and therefore tend to dive more deeply and remain submerged longer than other penguins. The deepest dive recorded for an emperor penguin was 565 meters. That's 1,854 feet. The longest recorded dive for an emperor penguin was 27.6 minutes. Both of these measurements are considered extremes. Most dives are between 21 to 40 meters, that's 70 to 131 feet, and last 2 to 8 minutes. They're fast, too, reaching speeds of 3.4 meters per second, that's 7.6 miles per hour. In this fic, I describe swimming distances in, quote, whale lengths, unquote. When Sherlock dives 20 blue whales, he's diving 20 times 25 meters, or 500 meters, 1,640 feet. Here's the key I've been using. These are averages. Another source I saw said that blues are 30 meters. Blue whale, 25 meters. Fin whale, 20 meters. Orca, 10 meters.